Welcome, welcome, welcome to Reaching New Heights with Troy Bell, the city manager, City of Muskegon Heights, where you get to know what you need to know so you'll be in the know. 103.7 The Beat. So thank you for tuning in every Wednesday, 2 p.m. And again, a big thanks to all the listeners and watchers who tune in and provide feedback throughout the week. I appreciate all the positive feedback and the constructive feedback as well. I'm glad to see so many people finding this as valuable information. And I encourage you to go ahead and post in the show. If you have questions, I'll try to get to those questions. And if I can't get to those questions in this show, I will try to reach out to you or follow up with answers in the next show. I am excited to welcome to the show today. I haven't seen him log in yet, but welcome to the show today. One of our staff members, one of our employees, and here we go on cue. I'm welcoming Mr. Calvin Davis to the show so that we can continue our conversation about Fight the Blight. But before, are you able to hear us okay there, Mr. Davis?
Absolutely.
Okay. You're a little faint, so you're going to have to speak up as much as possible. But thank you for joining the show. And before we jump into the topic of our show, I want to take care again of the housekeeping items. So, again, we're seeing the numbers with the Omicron variant and the virus, so encourage everybody to mask up as much as possible. Make sure that you get your vaccines and your booster. And again, understand that vaccines don't guarantee that you won't get it, but all the results and data show that for those people who are fully vaccinated and boosted, that the symptoms are much less. But in light of the fact that the symptoms are much less, you have to be diligent, vigilant, and getting tested, because you may not experience the symptoms, but you may be contagious. And the last thing you want is to be contagious and spread that to your loved ones, to your friends, so on and so forth. So I encourage you to engage in a testing regimen. We offer testing at City Hall every Thursday from 2:30 to 5:30. So we do that for our staff and our employees so that we know that in their jobs that requires them to be in contact with the community, that if they are positive, we take them out of that rotation so that we can protect the community. But in providing that service as part of a requirement for our staff, we open it up to all community members to come in every Thursday, 2:30 to 5:30, and please get tested. It's a simple process. It takes about 2 minutes. It's free, regardless of whether you have insurance or not. So come in, and it's a mouth swab that you do yourself. It's not the one that goes way up into your brain, but it is a very simple process. You swab your mouth, I think, 10 times on one side and 10 times on the other side. Take the stick and put it back into the container, and you're done. So it's very easy, very straightforward. And you get your results anywhere from 24 to 72 hours. They will either text you or email you or both so that you know what the results are, and you can move forward like that. So there's no reason why you can't come in and have access to this important resource. So I strongly encourage you to come in. There are other testing sites throughout the city. So if it's not at City Hall on Thursdays from 2:30 to 5:30, you can catch the other locations. I believe the same test provider that does our testing also does the high school on Friday mornings, if I'm not mistaken. So please take advantage of that. Update on meetings. So we just had this past week, or this week that we're in, was a council meeting week. So this past Monday, we had a council meeting and we're able to move through the items that were on the agenda. We have an approved new Parks and Rec plan, updated Parks and Rec plan with some minor modifications, edits, and changes. But I'm excited that we have this 5-year updated recreation plan now that will allow us to be able to apply for funding in the future. And that's one of the minimum requirements, that you have to have a plan in place before you are eligible to be able to make application. So I'm excited that that was taken care of. And so that's behind us, and we can move forward on implementing a number of these objectives. So the next thing that I want to mention to you is our next meeting will be a week from this Monday. That will be our work session for the month of February. So plan your calendars accordingly to be able to either Zoom in or come in person with social distancing and masking for our workshop council meeting in chambers at City Hall. That's 5:30 on Monday. It's the second and fourth Monday of every month that we have meetings. The second Monday is our workshop. The fourth Monday is our business session. So make plans to come in. Also on task for us on February 21st, that's the date we have tentatively, we will have a presentation of the visioning plan. And for those of you who may not have been privy to this information, the vision plan is a grant that we got from the Community Foundation and others to be able to do almost like a community charrette, where we invite and ask the community to provide input in what you want the community, the city, to look like in, say, 5 to 10 years. Now, this was modeled after the project that was done in the city of Muskegon. That was called, I believe it was called Imagine Muskegon. And so if you look at 10 years ago, what they started with and what the plan looks like, what you see downtown Muskegon is almost exactly what was on that plan. So we're hoping that this process will yield similar results for us here at the city of Muskegon Heights. There were multiple focus groups. There was multiple walkthroughs in our downtown area. There was a surveying and voting process that took place. And if you go to reachingnewmuskegonheights.org, you can see some of the results of that process for yourself. But if you don't want to go to the website, come in on February 21st at 5:30 p.m. and you'll see the full boat presentation of the visioning plan results that kind of brings together all the feedback that they got from the community, a group of planners that work for the Smith Group. They are the ones that the consultant that managed this process. They did a fantastic job through COVID and all the challenges associated with that to do this community engagement and an interactive process despite those challenges. And now we get to see the end result with a bow on it of what they came up with and what we collectively imagine our community will look like in 5 to 10 years. So please put that on your calendar, save the date, February 21st, 5:30 p.m. That is President's Day. So there is a slight possibility that based on the RSVPs that we may shift that left or right, but right now that's the date that we're focusing on. So stay tuned on that. We'll keep announcing any updates on that. They will be providing this presentation to the Downtown Development Authority in conjunction with members of the City Council. And the month of February is right around the corner, reminding everyone, not that I have to remind anyone, but Black Awareness Month, or some people refer to it as Black History Month. So February is that month that we celebrate the history of African Americans in this country. And so I'm excited that that's around the corner and all the things that that brings with it. I did not mention, like I always want to repeat, we have to make sure that in this upcoming year that we build new houses, because our city needs new revenue and our tax base needs to be reconstituted. And the only way that we do that is to begin to build new houses. And so we are planning an upcoming show to invite members of the community who might be interested in buying a new house to participate in the show, to solicit those members that might want to be ready to put in their applications. Hopefully we'll give you an opportunity to see some samples of what those houses will look like, and we can begin the constructive conversation. And I'm sure that's going to generate excitement and a flurry of interest, because we haven't built new homes in our community. And our guest today probably has some insight on that too, having been a member of this community for some time. We haven't built new houses in this community since 2004 was the last development. I think in 2014, there were two or three homes built just north of downtown. And other than that, nothing. The average age of our homes is 80 some odd years old. And so it's time for us to build new houses to lower the average age of our homes, but also to provide opportunities for families who want to develop their own wealth to transition from renting into home ownership, which is the way that you generate the single most significant factor in developing wealth in a lifetime. Is the ownership of property, home ownership. And so we want to get people out of renting, where they're mortgaging their lives away, to owning, where they're investing in their own home and property here in Muskegon Heights. So we have 1,000 vacant lots that are ready, primed to go. And so all we need is the developers to get going and those people who are interested to begin the process of putting in your application, getting qualified, and purchasing these homes. And on that note, I want to thank council and the mayor for the opportunity to serve as the city manager here and for their vision and moving forward on developing new homes in the community, because that is our way to a prosperous future. We have to generate new revenue, and the best way to do that is to fill in the 1,000+ gaps in our community with new homes. And so that is exciting. 2022 is exciting. And it is kind of a segue into the discussion about Black Awareness Month, because as many of you know, some of you may not, Muskegon Heights and Muskegon County is a victim, has been a victim, and it continues in many regards to be a victim of the process of redlining, where folks were directed to live in certain neighborhoods based on their socioeconomic status, but more importantly, based on the color of their skin. And Muskegon County is one of the counties in the state of Michigan that had the most severe cases consistently of redlining. And the legacy of that still haunts us to this day. So our opportunity, we're on the precipice, eve of the opportunity to address some of those horrific wrongs associated with redlining by beginning to build our own new homes here in Muskegon Heights. So the two things are connected. And I believe that is a perfect segue to bring in our code enforcement. Let me make sure I get the terminology right. Customer Service Representative 3. Mr. Davis, and thank you, Mr. Davis, for joining us here in the show. As you may have noticed in my background, we might have some visitors from time to time, because I am here in Troy, Michigan, which gets a little confusing because I'm at the hotel at the Michigan Municipal Executives Conference, and they keep saying Troy, and I keep turning around thinking they're talking to me. Here in the city of Troy. Great name, by the way. So we may have folks that are are walking through, but pay them no attention. But welcome to the show, Mr. Davis.
Well, how are you? Thank you so much. Glad to be on with you.
Excellent. Excellent. So, Mr. Davis, our customer service representative three, let's see. From what I understand, you are a native of Muskegon Heights, born and raised, if I'm not mistaken.
Absolutely. Right?
And also were a longtime employee. So you were employed early on. And in what capacity were you with the city?
Well, I was a police officer, served as a detective for a number of years.
Okay. And congratulations. So always warms my heart as a former police officer to welcome another former police officer into the fold. So how many years were you on the police department?
I'm just shy of 10 years.
Excellent. And at some point you left the city and tell the listeners and watchers what you were involved in when you left that role with the city.
Well, I was bivocational at the time I left the city. I was pastoring the local assembly and had the opportunity to lead to pastor in Northern Virginia.
And
served the congregation there for just a little over 15 years and became an empty nester and got a little homesick and started migrating back towards Michigan, never thinking I'd end up back home, but with the effects of COVID and all of the restrictions, it's kind of like Dorothy. I said, well, there's no place like home, so I came home under the storm, absolutely.
And what part of Northern Virginia were you in, if you don't mind me asking?
I was in a place right outside of Quantico.
That's right.
Yeah, okay. Called Woodbridge, Virginia.
Not far from the area that I spent some time in, Southern Maryland, as in my childhood growing up, so I know it well.
So you know about blue clack crabs, right?
Oh, yes. Yep, no doubt about it. So the bay, Bay Area, Chesapeake Bay, produced some fabulous crabs. And I remember as a kid, we would drive home down Indian Head Highway, and there would be trucks along the highway with fresh bushels of live crabs. And you buy a whole basket.
They're still there.
Yeah. And bring them home, and we'd have a big crab boil and put out the newspaper, and all you heard was cracking.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, so miss those days. Some obey and spice, seasoned spice. Yeah. But so you worked your way back here, and I'm glad to welcome you. I'm glad that you did, because now you are a public servant for the city again. And you started off as working with, I guess initially, if I'm not mistaken, as a subpoena officer, and we just figured out a way to join that with the part-time role of customer service rep. And so you want to talk about your duties as a subpoena officer and your duties in supporting code enforcement as a customer service rep.
Yes, sir. It's a dual role that I'm serving in terms of my capacity as a subpoena officer. I'm an essential officer of the court here in Muskegon Heights, where I go out and serve subpoenas to those who are summoned to seek to district court in some facet. And so I am charged to track down individuals and make sure that they get that summons. And as you know, that that's a job in itself, because many of our citizens, to some degree, are transient. And so, those challenges are there. But we've been very successful in making sure that we serve the city in that capacity thus far.
Excellent. Well, many of our listeners and watchers have heard me talk about the concerted effort and push in 2022 for Reaching New Heights, and the Fight the Blight in Muskegon Heights campaign, realizing that we have a beautiful city here in Muskegon Heights, and the effort to clean it up has to be intentional, has to be focused. And so we really want to press everybody in the community to come together in a unified way to address the issue that we have with trash and dumping and blight. And so I'd like for you, for our listeners, to talk about your role in addressing aspects of the issues that we're facing with Fight the Blight.
Well, as you know, we're challenged on many fronts in the area of blight. I believe myself at this point to be the head of the spear in terms of going out making, taking the initiative to approach the plight from the perspective that many hands make light work, getting everyone involved. I've had the opportunity to deal with everyone on the spectrum, from the property owners to homeowners to tenants, our local businesses, and in many cases challenging them to improve standards and sharing with them what our vision is going forward. Having to follow up in many cases in that regard, because for some individuals, they've just decided that nothing is going to be acceptable. They don't want to do anything, that's that doesn't line up with the vision that we have for the city, and it's certainly not the capacity in which I view the city growing up. When you talk to people from here, they'll tell you this has always been a great place to live, to raise children. And somewhere along the way, the perception changed, and along with it, the expectations changed. And so we're, really challenging, tenants, landlords, property owners, investors, to not only see the vision, but participate in the vision, and helping them understand their role in the vision, and many times having to hold their feet to the fire as a result of it.
I appreciate that. And before we go on, just a reminder, some of the comments are saying it's difficult to hear you. So please try to speak as loudly as you can. That's comfortable for you.
Yes, sir.
And you touched a little bit on this. Why is this important to you? I know that you're a resident, you grew up here, but why is code enforcement, why is addressing the code in Muskegon Heights important to you?
Well, it's important from a professional standpoint, because when I view the city, in many regards, I view it as a place that not only has the potential, but a place that could literally be a tourist attraction. We're so close to the water. Mm-hmm. There's so many people that travel through here during the summer months. I'd like for the city to become a beacon for in an attraction for individuals versus a detractor. And so it's important that we do everything we can to bring attention to the transformation that's happening, and also change the perception of individuals who would otherwise, go use Seaway Drive to go around this, or go up 31 so that they don't have to come through here, but really make it a place where individuals can come and spend their summers and vacation and enjoy themselves. So from that professional standpoint, that's one of the reasons why it's so important to me, because I just believe we have untapped resources here that would benefit us greatly, if we were able to push things in the right direction. And then from a personal note, it's initially, it was heartbreaking to see the condition of the city when I came back home, and often, wondered what role I could play in helping revitalize the community. And so it's important because of that. I want to be part of that upswing in terms of putting us in a position to transform into something that we can be proud of.
Absolutely. And I strongly feel, if I can add to that, that every member of this community deserves to have the best possible quality of life. Our community and our residents deserve to have a safe and secure, clean, neat, orderly environment. Now, this is much of my life as a kid growing up was on military bases and forts. And, you know, in the military, there's a lot of order. And so some of it was, as a kid growing up, was frustrating. Because there were things that I would have liked to have done that I didn't have, I couldn't get away with. Things that I tried to do that I didn't get away with. But looking back on it, I really appreciate, you know, it was always clean, it was always orderly. There was the structure there that that made it feel safe, because with it being clean and orderly, you knew that somebody was paying attention to it. Somebody cared about it. And because they cared about it, we collectively cared about it. And so that is something that I feel that every community deserves, and particularly in Muskegon Heights. And that's one of the areas that I draw my passion for the work that we're doing with Fight the Blight, because it is within our reach and within our grasp to achieve that, you know, quality of life for our community. And so I appreciate the fact that you can look back at what it looked like before and connect today to what needs to be done to get it to look like it did before. So I appreciate the fact that you bring that aspect to the work that you do. So what are some of the specific challenges that you run into in your day-to-day activities and going about your job in addressing blight in the community?
Well, some of the challenges are being able to communicate effectively with the property owners. We have property owners who, in many cases, have purchased the homes in efforts to rent or to lease the properties. And if we could raise the level of communication and connectability with those property owners so that we can convey our expectations and work with them, many times we can kind of curb what I'm seeing. What I'm seeing is that there, you know, the vegetation and growth in many of the properties is outside of the scope of our code. Many of our properties are being used as dumping grounds and places where things are being stored without any upkeep or maintenance, abandoned vehicles on roadways, and out of all places in the front yard. I'm just, you know, that just kind of bewilders me how, you know, we're using cars as front yard ornaments versus, you know, putting them in the proper place, parking them in the proper place, storing them according to code. And then, you know, finding the other challenge that I'm finding is that when making contact with many of our citizens, it's almost an instant pushback because either they have been operating this way for a long time, or they feel as though they don't want to engage in productive conversations. And so those are many of the challenges that I'm facing when I go out to do code enforcement.
Sure. So do you find that the majority of the businesses or residents that you come in contact with are familiar with the code? Is it just that people don't know and it's an educational challenge that we need to do a better job in educating the members of the community of what the rules and regulations are and the expectations?
Well, yes, sir. That's certainly an element of it. We have become a melting pot. And so we have people migrating here from other states, other parts of the county and the state at large. And so the codes and the ordinances are different everywhere you go. And so in some cases, we're finding that individuals are just not aware, and or they have not been told where they can find the information. And so that's one part of it. And then we have another group of people because of our systems, our software we have. Whenever we make contact with citizens, it's notated. And so I can go into the history of the contacts at a particular property, dealing with a particular property owner, and you can just see the negligence from year to year.
Year over year.
Few times with the same property, with the same property owner. They're just not in compliance, and they just don't want to comply. They're just satisfied with whatever residual income they're getting from the properties, but they don't want to maintain them according to our codes and our standards.
So I get the sense, sorry to interrupt you, that that if we were able to communicate better to the citizens, that might be part of the battle. That might be a way of addressing part of the challenges that you run into. And I'm saying that because I've had residents tell me, you know, well, I didn't know, and the city needs to let us know, and the city needs to tell us, and you know, everything. And I get that. All of our codes are published on the website, and if you go to the website, you can see the municipal code. But that's not something that the average person does on a regular day to log on to the website and just, you know, for pleasure reading, look up the municipal code and just start from page one and go to page 786, so to speak.
Yeah.
So, but I tell them, you know, it costs us money to communicate oftentimes, because if we sent out a letter to everybody in the community, that we're talking about $2,000 to send out a letter to everybody in the community. And even if we did have the money to do such a thing, how effective is that? Because the mail open rate is about 25 to 30%, unless it's certified mail.
Yes.
Effectively, we'd be throwing away, you know, on $2,000, we'd be throwing away roughly $1,600. So trying to get residents to understand, it's not that the city doesn't want to communicate, but there's a cost associated with it. And until we get some revenue, start building some houses, get some tax base back, we have to make sure that we take advantage of things like this, the radio show, word of mouth, the internet, social media, to get the word out. But and you know, maybe one day we will be successful in getting a mobile app out there that can remind people and notify people proactively, as opposed to waiting for them to come to the website.
Yes, sir. I mean, I'm 100% in agreement with that. You know, the way consumers intake or ingest content is not the way it used to be. It's not through the snail mail anymore. And so we've got to find an effective way to communicate to the masses through, you know, through the computer, through the internet, through apps, you know, maybe mass text messages that goes out through some type of notification system. But there's a way that we can reach them. And we can do it effectively, and I believe at low cost.
I'm smiling because I just read the message from Will Roberson Senior. Mm-hmm. And he caught the drift of the wind that I was blowing, and that's you know, yes, a mass mobile app that we can blast out communication so that we can make sure that people are proactively notified and aware of the things that we're doing, and also create a dialogue, an app that allows us to be able to communicate back and forth. Because if you're one person and one man, and you can only do so much, even though you're doing a fantastic job, I have to say. If we enlist the efforts of the community, when they see things that are wrong, to just go on, to have the tool available to them where they can just click one, two, or three times and send us a communication that says, hey, this is something that's wrong and that needs to be addressed or that we need help with. And that way, it's not just about one person trying to cover the whole community, or even three or four persons covering the whole community. If all 10,000 of us are paying attention to how things look and what needs to be done, then we can accomplish something. And I want to come back to that, because I know in conversations you had mentioned your effort and seeing things that are not necessarily directly within the scope of what you're asked to do. And I want to come back to talking about that as a collective effort. But I want to recognize what one of the notes in here says from Ms. Waller, I believe. In her note, you're not wrong. It's not off topic. It is definitely relevant. And I hear what you're saying 100%, that we have blight. Part of that blight is the condition of our streets. And the condition of our streets, just like all the rest of the blight, has an impact on our ability to create home value, if I can paraphrase what you're saying. And I have residents and community members who have commented about the city-owned properties and the condition of that. And what it comes back to is, and some people think that the city has millions of excess dollars. And I want to remind people that we're working with a $1.2 million deficit. 92% of the money that we spend are on costs that we absolutely have to spend it on, that we're dealing with a workforce that's at bare minimum. We don't have backup roles for our positions. And so it's not like we're spending a lot of frivolous money on staff. And the reality of it is, we don't have, unless we generate more revenue, we don't have the resources to be able to maintain city-owned property on the level that I would like to see us do it, on a level that it needs to be maintained. There are city-owned vacant lots out there that are in horrible condition, but until we start building homes that create a tax base that allows us to have more revenue to be able to hire people, purchase equipment, and have resources to address those issues, we're in a downward spiral. So we have to break the cycle somewhere. And that effort to break the cycle is by building new homes. And even with the blight that we have in the community, we paid, we got a grant for $78,000 to study the demand for housing and retail in our community. And they said, even with the blight in our community, we could build 175 homes in this community and still not meet the demand that is in this community for new homes. So we can build them, people will buy them despite the blight. And if we do that, that will generate the revenue for us to continue to address the blight. So I appreciate that question. That's an excellent question. And it is one of those Robin Peter to pay Paul types of things. How do you prioritize? Where do you start? You know, how do you eat an elephant one bite at a time, right? And so we will get there. And I think this is a perfect time to mention what we may not realize, despite the blight in our community, despite the challenge that we have with roads, and many communities across Michigan have these issues with roads, and we're not the only one. But despite all those things, the gaze in Michigan is shifting from looking towards Detroit easterly to looking westerly towards the lake. We as a society, as a state, as a country are beginning to realize the value of our Great Lakes and of our water. And so when you look at Grand Rapids and the economic development that's going on there in Grand Rapids, and realize that the same house that somebody pays $350,000, $400,000 there can be built in Muskegon Heights for $150,000 to $200,000, you can see driving 40 minutes is worth saving $200. $200,000. And to be even more so, to be in that middle space, that middle point or that midtown between where you work and where you play, the beach, is an ideal location for the city of Muskegon Heights to be in. So as people begin to look westerly instead of easterly, they're looking for places where they can live that's midway between where they work and where they play. And that is the ideal location for Muskegon Heights. So as I've seen in my career as a city manager, I've seen communities embrace renaissance where people thought that it was not possible. Miami, Fort Lauderdale, Harlem, Los Angeles, Washington, D.C., you know, places that nobody would pay a dime for because the buildings were broken down and the streets were horrible. And now you can't find a place there for less than $500,000. So the development, economic development of building came first, and the streets and so on and so forth were brought along with that. So I hope that answers your question, Ms. Waller, and thank you for your post. So coming back to where I was saying I wanted to circle back. So, you know, your job as a community specialist, community service representative 3, and I know it says code enforcement because on your title, because you do in that capacity, in that job, enforce codes. You know, your primary task is environmental, specifically focusing on vehicles and the like, because that's one of the low-hanging fruit. But, you know, in conversations I've had with you, your love for the community does not allow you to ignore the other things that you see while you're out and about. And I'd like for the community to hear you talk, expand on that.
Well, you know, as you and I have talked in times past, you know, I've been willing and open to expand my duties and my roles that, quite honestly, I'm not being paid for. And because I believe that if I see a hole that needs to be plugged, I know we don't have resources. I know that nobody's coming to the rescue. I know I'm the stopgap. And so with a glad heart, I'm willing to do it because, you know, I know that there's, quite honestly, no one else that's going to do it. So, you know, everything from, you know, cutting grass that I know I shouldn't cut at Johnny O'Hara's Park, but because I want people to be able to see around the turn when they come, you know, down the hill and not get in an accident or, you know, boarding up vacant houses and or, you know, getting out of my vehicle and picking up tires on the side of the road. I do it because I know that it's going to take that approach to get things turned in the right direction. People are going to have to come out of their comfort zone, and they're going to have to be willing to do things that they're not necessarily getting paid to do. Right. Well, I'm a spiritual man, so I just believe I'm going to be blessed in other areas of my life because of my approach to this. And I believe that, you know, it's going to go a long way if we all do it. You know, the world I come from, I come out of the church world, and you need volunteers to do everything. Mm-hmm. So you really seldom have the money to do anything. So you have to think outside of the box. You have to be creative. And then you have to do what I suggested to you the other day, is that you have to be willing to use, you have to use the willing until the able comes along. And we just
I love that.
Willing people, just willing, who don't have, who are not stuck on the title. They're not stuck on getting patted on the back. They're not looking for accolades. Mm-hmm. But they're just willing to do whatever that part is. And, you know, I don't know if I'm speaking out of turn, but many times in our community, we define ourselves by what we do or by what we're willing to do. And so you have people who are pigeonholed, who are advancing their cause with passion, but they're doing it while they're stepping over a piece of paper in the street. You know, mm-hmm. they go hand in hand. They don't go opposite each other, you know. So that's kind of why I take the approach that I do.
And I guess one of the hardest things for me, because of the way that I was raised and the environment that I came out of, you know, we were taught that if you're walking down the street and you see trash, it might not be your trash, but because you see it, it's your responsibility to do something about it.
Yeah.
And that's just a different mindset. And what I have to realize is not everybody was raised with that foundation or that acumen of feeling responsible for your community, regardless of whether or not you're responsible for what's wrong. And so I do believe that we can change the tide on that. It pains me when I am driving down the street and I stop and I see a young person walking across the street throwing their mail on the ground as they're opening it up and reading it and discarding it. And I know they're always upset when I stop and say, hey, you got to pick that up. You know, you can't just, oh, I don't want that. Well, no, you might not want it, but you need to pick it up. And if you don't want it, put it in a trash can. Simple as that.
Sure.
And that's what we're asking. You know, we're asking everybody to be responsible for themselves and also take an interest in addressing the area around them as well.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Kind of, you know, my approach to things is that all of us are influencers on some level. We have people and relationships where we are able to influence individuals and situations. And if we just look at it from being an influencer, just influence some those that you can influence, it'll go a long way.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I just want to go back and emphasize this. And we've talked around it, but I've had people question, why do we have these codes in place? Why is it important to have these types of codes in place that say that your grass should not be higher than a specific length, or that your fence can't be broken down or in disrepair, or that you can't have your car parked across your grass in your front lawn? You know, why are these codes important, and why is it important to enforce these codes?
Well, the codes are important because allows us to be a city. The municipal codes, for those who don't understand what they are, they're an extension of the municipality. And so as a result of it, the codes is what keeps the standard that allows us to be a city and function as a city versus just being a rural neighborhood. And so it sets the standard. And when you look at the standard, it is what they consider to be a minimum standard. So we're not asking you to go above and beyond. We're just simply saying these codes are minimum standard that if everyone abides by them best of their ability, then it causes us to be able to live in an ecosystem where our economic development is where it needs to be, where our streets are being able to be paved properly, where we can live in a safe environment and have a safe community. So they go hand in hand with our way of life. To be quite honest, that's why they're important, because it sets the quality of life for us as citizens in the city of Muskegon Heights.
Right. And I think it clarifies what the expectation is.
Absolutely.
When you have a code that everybody is responsible for, has access to, has an understanding of, then we all have an opportunity to have that same expectation of ourselves and of the people that we call our neighbors.
Sure.
That code defines what that expectation looks like. And it's almost like an implicit contract that by being a resident, in this community, you choose to be a resident in a community that has these given specific rules and regulations. And in so doing, you agree to abide by them. And so your neighbor or the person across the street has a right to expect you to follow, be aware of, to follow the same rules that they do. And within that framework, we carve out a way that we can be civil, have a civilization, and have a neighborhood and a community that can engage positively with each other, because we have these, like you said, minimum standards in place that define how we should live and how we should treat each other. So I think that's, you use the right word, civilization, because that is that is, you know, the base of the foundation of what is community. If we threw all the rules and regulations out the window, we'd have a Lord of the Flies.
It'd be uncivilized. Absolutely. Right. And quite honestly, there are places who don't have the type of codes that we have. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people choose to live that way. You just can't do it within our city. And I think if we get to that place, we'll be in a good place.
I made the mistake once in my lifetime of being on a condominium board and being president of a condominium board. And I remember having to tell folks, you know, here are the rules and regulations that were there when you purchased your property. You knew it. If you didn't like it, you shouldn't have purchased the property. And if you don't like it, you can go buy yourself a house, you know, with 20 acres where you don't have to look at your neighbors. You don't have to be around your neighbors. You only have to be accountable to those 19 and a half acres.
Absolutely.
Right. And, you know, there's some pros and cons associated with that. But if you want to live here, that is the sacrifice that you're going to make. So it's the same kind of agreement, implicit agreement that we have with each other. So it is what holds us all together. And I think when we get to our objective, with the Fight the Blight program, and we clean up our community in the way that it should look, I believe that people are going to jump on board and begin to jealously protect that. And I think, like I said before, there's value in our community. People want to live here. When we start building the homes that fill in the gaps, because a lot of the young folks, and I feel so old saying young folks now, people younger than myself don't want a fixer-upper. They don't want to have to, you know, move into a house with a hammer in their hand and a screwdriver in their back pocket. They want to be able to move into something that's ready to go, turnkey, when I walk in the door. And so that's what we're missing in many regards. I think when we start to provide that, then there'll be more demand for renovating the homes that we have. And that's just a rising tide that raises all ships. I mean, I know for a fact that for myself personally, I'm ready to jump in line and buy, you know, one of the first new houses that gets built.
It gives our young people an avenue that they currently don't have.
Right.
You know, they go off to college and come back, and they're young professionals. In many cases, they can't even look to our city in the state that we're in right now to purchase their first home, which would obviously raise the economic base and put us in a better situation with our schools and everything else.
Right.
We've got to get that, you know, that Generation X going in this direction and create prime opportunities for them. And
right.
It's going to give us the shot in the arm that we need.
That's right. And what we're looking at and bringing in to the community with the new development that's on the horizon is lofts and one-bedroom units and two-bedroom, three-bedroom houses, fourplexes, duplexes, you know, all these things that provide the type of housing that allows you to go through the different phases of life. You know, when you're single coming back from college, you don't need a four-bedroom house.
No, sir.
And you probably are not in a position to afford it, but you can get a nice loft or a one-bedroom. And then when you're ready to marry and have a family, it might be that, three-bedroom, two-bedroom apartment. And then when the family gets bigger, you might be looking at that three-bedroom, four-bedroom house. You know, and we want to be able to provide opportunities for people to reside and live and enjoy Muskegon Heights in every phase of their lives. And when you get to be, you know, a senior, an elder, like an older person like me, then, you know, it might be assisted living or senior living where you don't need loud music next to you and so on and so forth. And we want to be able to provide the whole range and the continuum of opportunities for everybody in this community. And people hear me talk about $150,000 houses, $180,000 houses, and don't realize that $600 a month, you can purchase a house in that range with the right credit. And we have folks that are paying $800 and $900 and sometimes $1,200-$1,500 in rent for places that are falling apart. So the opportunity is there. And as we clean up the community, we fight the blight in Muskegon Heights and begin to renovate and build. We are specifically making sure that we provide opportunities in the for people to buy homes between that in that range of the $40,000 to $80,000 range. So the beautiful thing about this community, we have water, we have rail, we have roads, we have a grid system, we have our own water filtration plant, is we have all these assets. All we have to do is build. And we have the room and space to be able to build the whole continuum of what people are looking for. You know, from that loft to senior assisted. So we got it all. We just need to take advantage of it. And in wrapping this up, I want to thank you, Mr. Davis, for the hard work that you put in, the vision that you bring to the table and your role. And like I said before, the intangible aspects of what you bring, you know, your knowledge and history over the many years that you've been in, part of this community. Whether you went away and came back, you still have that knowledge that you, that perspective that grounds you. And you know, for those residents that might not see it or have an opportunity to appreciate it, it shows in the work that you do. And so I want to thank you and applaud you for that.
Well, thank you so much for having me and allowing me to serve here at the city. I'd be remiss not to say while I'm on the call with you that the inspections department led by Kerry Moore is he's going to be unrolling or rolling out a Fight the Blight campaign this spring, spring cleaning. So look for the billboards, the correspondence, locations where you can go on the weekend to get rid of items and throw them in the dumpster versus the alternatives. And so be on the lookout for that, because he's going to roll that out spring, and we're excited about the community being a vital part of what we're doing in that spring cleanup.
Right. Absolutely. Thank you for mentioning that.
Yes, sir.
And preemptively, I want to let our listeners know that we're going to continue to talk about these two main issues about building new homes, about buying new homes, transitioning people from renting to owning, and fighting the blight in our upcoming shows. A week from next Wednesday, we'll be welcoming DJ Hilson to the show to be able to talk about the impact from his perspective and his job and his role that building new houses has, or the lack of, or the presence of vacant lots and vacant buildings, and how that affects his job and his role as a public servant here in the county. And I also want to talk about the positive things in upcoming shows. So I've received some requests to talk about the grants that we've received in the city. And, you know, as difficult as things have been, and the fact that we're working with the deficit, when you add up over the last 2 years, the amount of grant money that we have gone out and sought and have received to begin to do projects in this city, it totals over $10 million. And so that's a lot for a community of 10,000 residents over a 2 year period. And so some of that money is designed to be spent over the next 3 to 4 years, but it is money that's coming into our community as a result of the effort of staff and some nonprofits and business owners who have worked collaboratively to put together these grant proposals and get them awarded. So I'm excited to talk about that in future shows, so please tune in. And you know what's on the horizon. So Again, thank you, Mr. Davis. We'll wrap it up here. Thank you to all the residents for tuning in, for watching. Thank you for those that posted in the comments. I really appreciate your comments, and thank you for participating because we want to make this as valuable and informative to the community as possible because we are reaching new heights. And this program is here to highlight that and to give you, like I say, where you get to know what you need to know so you'll be in the know on 103.7.